and I'm tired of being right.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
What are you people, on dope?
Podcasting live from the Boar's Head Tavern in downtown St. Sadie's, Maryland. This is the voice of post-evangelicals everywhere, a voice of sanity in the midst of the evangelical wilderness. This is Internet Monk Radio. Hello, everybody. It is your friendly neighborhood Internet Monk here with Internet Monk Radio podcast number 60. My name is Michael Spencer. I'm glad that you have joined me this afternoon. It is a beautiful late May day. School is out where I am and everybody's having a good time. If you haven't checked out Coffee Cup Apologetics yet, go to ccapologetics.wordpress.com. See the other podcast that I've been putting together. Little more light apologetics oriented, and I think some of you would find it helpful. I'm really fascinated by the way the death of Jerry Falwell has been treated everywhere. You know, here's a guy that really, in terms of evangelicalism, is just an incredibly significant figure, and his passing has been almost completely ignored by Christians. I may be wrong, but I mean, it just seems like that evangelicals had a lot more to say about the passing of John Paul II than they did about Jerry Falwell. And Jerry Falwell bridges that independent Baptist fundamentalism and the kind of new evangelical political social concern that has been part of the life of millions of evangelicals. I mean, this guy's shift from we have nothing to do with politics to we're going to dominate politics is without a doubt one of the most significant currents in contemporary evangelicalism. And Jerry Falwell was the man when it came to that. Now, I mean, a lot of us would look at Falwell's ministry and say it pretty much replaced the gospel, and that's a shame. But that's, not for us to sit in the place of God and pass judgment. But, I mean, this was a guy whose decision to go from basically the kind of evangelical hands-off approach to political and social questions to being highly involved, even influencing and dominating, you've got to look at that and say it was significant. And, of course, there's a lot of people saying now the passing of Falwell signals the rise of people like Rick Warren and Rob Bell and Bill Hybels, who are talking about a whole different set of social issues and have much more of a global view and are much more influenced by what a lot of evangelicals would call a kind of liberalism. I mean, I hate to use that word, but that's what we're going to be hearing, that, you know, it's, quote, liberal to be involved with the AIDS issue in Africa, that it's, quote, liberal to be talking about global warming. And that's not for this podcast to judge, but the passing of Falwell, I think, does signal the end of another aspect of evangelicalism and underlines that those of us who are post-evangelical and believe that things are coming to an end can point at some things and say that's a shift and something's going to be happening. Man, you could talk about, in terms of anti-Catholic, non-ecumenical. Falwell represented all those things, and what's coming after him is not going to be the same thing at all. There are still some people out there like that. Here in Kentucky, we have some guys that could definitely out-Falwell. But on the whole, on the national stage, the passing of Jerry Falwell, I think, is another real indication that we're entering a post-evangelical era. As I tell people all the time, I don't know what that means. People say, what do you mean? Well, I don't know what it means. I just know that one thing is ending, and another thing or many things or nothing, I don't know, something is coming about. And, every place you look, I see signs that evangelicalism is coming to the end of whatever reign of influence that it had and what is coming after it is remarkably different. I mean, all these conversions we're having to the Roman Catholic Church. Somebody posted on the blogosphere kind of an under-the-table quote that Elizabeth Elliot, you know, the wife of Jim Elliot, shadow of the Almighty, end of the spear, that Elizabeth Elliot, I mean, an evangelical stalwart, in this particular blog post, the guy was citing somebody who said that she had said to an interviewer, if I had the courage, I would become Roman Catholic. And of course, you got Beckwith, you've got Coons, you've got all these people and more Catholic converts. It seems like I'm surrounded these days with atheists writing books on and blog posts on one hand and evangelicals turned Catholic on the other hand, giving their story. Very strange time. There is a lot happening. There's a lot happening. Over at the Boar's Head Tavern this week, we had a huge discussion of Marian dogmas. Marian dogma is not a girl you went to high school with. Marian dogma is those particular doctrines the Roman Catholic Church has asserted about Mary over the last 2,000 years, many of them fairly recent, many of them having to do with the death, ascension, coronation, terms like Mary the Queen of Heaven, Mary Mediatrix, Mary in terms of intercessory power. Was a fascinating debate because we've now got a Roman Catholic guy in the Boar's Head. We had a lot of Lutheran guys and guys that are sympathetic with Lutheranism and Anglicanism and Eastern Orthodoxy, as well as, you know, the usual crowd of Presbyterians and Baptists all piling in on this. And it was one of the best discussions we've ever had. I know to a lot of people looking on the outside, it looked crazy, but it was a great discussion. And here's another one. The kind of openness to Mary having a significant place in evangelical spirituality, which there's really nothing wrong with that if we frame it biblically. That's a shift. You can go to internetmonk.com and read my interview with Scott McKnight, where he talks about just how far can evangelicals go developing Mary as part of the faith. And of emphasis on Mary as part of Christian spirituality. And there's some books recommended over there that I think you might find fascinating. All right, I'll be right back. Okay, today's big event is we are going to take a tour of my iPod, the podcast list on my iPod. And I'm going to talk a little bit about as many of the programs as I can that I get regularly through iTunes. If you don't know about all that, I'm a little puzzled how you're listening to me, though I know you can listen off the website. But most of my listeners probably already are familiar with how to subscribe to podcasts. It's one of the very cool free things that you can do if you have a fast enough internet connection. Top of my list, the Daily Jesuit podcast, which is not daily, and it's not done nearly frequently enough to suit those of us who like it. But this is my friend Noel Haakkinen. He does a podcast and a video podcast in which he answers questions and talks about things that are of interest to him. And I would highly recommend it to you, even though he is a little lax about getting it out there regularly. That's because he is a pastor, one of the pastors of a fantastic church where he's doing stuff that matters. Then I have the Alalon Roxburgh Journal. This is Alan Roxburgh from Alalon, which is a website dealing with the emerging church, missional churches. Roxburgh Journal is interviews primarily with people that the Alalon website focuses on. Steve Taylor has been a really fine one. Goheen, can't remember the guy's first name, David Goheen, been a really fine interview. Then I have the Audition podcast, which is a podcast from Mars Hill Audio. If you are one of the people who took the Mars Hill tapes and then the Mars Hill CDs, you are happy to know that Mars Hill Audio, which is kind of NPR for Christians, that's the only thing I know to call it. It has a lot of that feel because Ken Myers was part of NPR for quite a while. You'll be glad to know that Audition comes out about once a month, and they go through the old Mars Hill Audio material and put together a really nice podcast. Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. I listen to that every day that they do question and answer. I really don't do the interviews or the other programs. I like Hank. I know there are some questions some people have about him, but I don't have those questions. I'm pretty satisfied. I've looked into it that Hank is one of the good guys. His stuff on eschatology particularly is helpful. He is not a dispensationalist. He's an amillennialist. And his book, The Apocalypse Code, is a very good book to get quite a conversation started on how dispensational views of the end times may actually be promoting some things that none of us as Christians want to be associated with. Christian Comedy Podcast, about once a week, 10 minutes, and it's just what it says, comedy. I need a laugh. Chrysler Music Legends. This is a one-hour program, comes out once a month. It's a documentary on various musicians, each one very different. Sly and the Family Stone last month, The Clash this month. Johnny Cash has been one of the podcasts. So Chrysler Music Legends, you can, if you enjoy music documentaries, you'd like that. Covenant Radio Podcast. These are some good Calvinistic Reformed brothers who do some very good interviews having to do with the new perspective on Paul, federal vision, issues in the Reformed community. There are really several pretty good podcasts from the Reformed community these days. This may be my favorite one in terms of interviews. Very fair. Derb Radio on National Review. John Derbyshire is the guy. He's just kind of a curmudgeon. It's a political and cultural commentary podcast. Comes out, I don't know, maybe once every couple of weeks. It should be weekly, but it's a little slow. Top of my list of favorite podcasts is In the Studio with Michael Card. You've heard me plug that before. It's a one-hour program, Bible study, music, a lot of things that I'm interested in, like community and creativity. I think very, very highly of Michael Card and his ministry, his life. I recommend that to you. Just started taking a podcast called John Lennon, The Lost Lennon Tapes. If you're a Beatles fan or just enjoy looking into the cultural shifts that surrounded the Beatles and issues surrounding the 60s and the Cultural Revolution, you probably already know about those tapes. This was a pretty successful group of radio programs, maybe late 80s, early 90s. They're now available as podcasts, and fascinating stuff. Lots of interviews with Lennon, lots of music. I would recommend it. I get an open line, a daily open line from Moody Broadcasting Network, which is a Bible question and answer program. One of the things I listen to the least. When I run out of things to listen to, I do listen to it. The Ordinary Means Podcast, which is some good Reformed brothers generally talking about church life and worship life. Most of the time, pretty good. Sometimes it gets a little bit down the TR road for my taste, but I do enjoy many of the discussions that they have on there. Saddleback Church, Drive Time Devotions. These are 10-minute daily devotions going straight through books of the Bible. While I may not be the biggest fan of Rick Warren and the whole Saddleback purpose-driven church thing, these are really good devotions. They're not scholarly. They're not, you know, theology lectures. They are devotions, but they go straight through books. There's some very good outline material there. For those of you that are preachers, you might want to collect some of that. But if I were going to recommend one podcast for Christian encouragement to any lay person, you got 10 minutes, you want to get into the scripture, Saddleback Church Drive Time Devotions, very good. Sword of Gryffindor, it's my friend Travis Prinzi. It's a blog about the Harry Potter books. I've never read the Potter books, but everybody in my house has. I've seen all the movies. I am interested in them as an English teacher, and Travis always has some good stuff to say. The Hour with George Strombo. I'm not going to try to pronounce that Greek last name. It's about 10 minutes each day of excerpts from interviews from this Canadian Broadcasting Corporation show, and I like it. I like it. See, today's is with Perry Farrell, great musician. Harry Shearer was yesterday. They've had Alistair McGrath, Richard Dawkins, all kinds of people Just a really good 10-minute podcast. Right under Michael Carr at the top of my list is The Kindling's Muse. Dick Staub does a podcast. It may be 8 or 10 minutes. It may be 20 minutes. I don't catch it as often as I'd like. I do tend to kind of sort through the topics, but this is something that deals with creativity, intersection of Christianity and culture. Lots of good interviews. I like the whole atmosphere. The Kindling's Muse, if it were a real place, is a place I'd absolutely be all the time. It's got that pub feel. The Narrow Mind, you all know I'm a Narrow Mind fan. I wouldn't call myself an addict entirely, but I really do like the show. I like to listen to Gene Cook Jr.'s evolution as a person kind of dealing with what it means to be a Reformation Christian. He is ruthless on legalism. He's got a great sense of humor. I appreciate his commitment to Scripture. I'm not as into his particular brand of apologetics as maybe some of you would be, but I do appreciate presuppositionalism and try to incorporate it into my approach. And Gene's one of the few guys out there that will teach about presuppositional apologetics. Probably number three on my podcast list of favorites is the Relevant Magazine podcast. That's between an hour and a half podcast. I just put that in the little stereo and let it play. I get a lot of good music recommendations, good media recommendations, and a lot of laughs. Very, very funny. Right into that, number four on my list, the Revolution 21 podcast, which is an eclectic collection of music from a guy out of Omaha. Again, just music to listen to from the everything from the 30s to the 50s to right up till today. This is a wonderful radio show. You need to support this guy. He's also got a very good blog called Revolution 21's Blog for the People. And would number five on my list would be Theology in a Pub. The Theology in a Pub guys are graduates of Dallas Seminary. They're doing basic theology. They did a wonderful series on the emerging church. I listened to another good series they did on Roman Catholicism. Their programs are about half an hour each. They go in series. I don't listen to all the series, but the ones that interest me, I do. It's good stuff if you want seminary level, but you're not off to seminary. Tony Campolo's podcast, I enjoy that a lot. Don't agree with Tony all the time, but he does about a half an hour podcast for a British audience. It's kind of strange. I don't know why it's not for Americans. And so sometimes he's explaining things that all of us understand. But it's a very good podcast. And this last one, he talked about gun laws and pacifism and Virginia Tech. And he does a remarkable amount of stuff having to do with issues that post-evangelicals are all about. Tony was a big part of my life when I was a younger minister. And even though I've kind of, you know, walked away from him because we don't share political views, I still find him to be a very compelling and genuine, earnest Christian. The White Horse Inn. White Horse Inn is just a great program of Reformation theology. It's often the best, I think, Reformation-oriented program you can listen to. Mike Horton, Kim Riddlebarger, and the other guys on there do a fine job. The topics are just good, solid things that everybody needs to know. These are professors and guys that could shoot right over our heads, but they bring it down to our level. I would recommend this to anybody who's interested in theology, particularly Reformed theology. Then I've got a series of Roman Catholic podcasts that I'm listening to. I'm trying to get a feel for why people are converting to the Roman Catholic Church and are drawn to it. And so one of the things that I've done is collect a few Roman Catholic podcasts. I'll tell you about a couple of them that I've been listening to recently. I listened to Catholic Exchange's Rock Solid with Mark Shea. That's about 10 minutes, and that's the one I can usually catch if I can't get the others. There is one called St. Irenaeus Ministries, which I believe is a college ministry, but I cannot recall where. And they do a very good Bible studies. Rarely do I hear anything out of that I can't affirm completely. I've really been impressed. They've been doing the Life of David lately. The last one was on Psalm 51. And then the University of St. Andrews in Scotland has a Catholic society, and I listen to some of the talks there so far. They've either been ones that I couldn't disagree with, or that I could hardly agree with anything. So I try to keep myself in a position of being informed not only about Catholicism from the standpoint of what do the books say, but from what do people say and how do they practice it. And so right now I've got a few of those on there. Probably not going to have all of them for very long. Used to have a couple of baseball podcasts, but can't stand to hear about my Reds, so I've dropped those. No more baseball podcasts. So that's what's on the iTunes podcast list. And you can go back and write some of those down and check them out. Those are all good things. And no, I don't listen to all those every day or every week, but I listen to what I can when I can. And it makes for a good use of time. The strange, spooky sound, squeaking sounds. The back door opening as my son takes trash out to the trash compound. I put up a post at internetmonk.com. Has to do with male spiritual leadership. And kind of the summary of the post is this, that if we are going to talk about male leadership, we need to talk about repenting of some particular sins that are common to guys in their relationships with their wives and their children. And I'm already getting an interesting response to that, because there are going to be some people who say, well, evangelicalism is feminized and men are the ones who are being sinned against. Men are the ones who are being criticized and blamed for everything, and now you've just joined in. On the other hand, maybe it's not as simple as you're thinking. I believe that it's true that evangelicalism is feminized. I think one of the reasons that evangelicalism is feminized is that men have not repented of the particular sins that have damaged their marriages and their homes, and then subsequently their churches and the larger culture. I am not in any way wanting to hang the blame for the troubles of the world around the neck of men. But I am a guy, and I am aware of my own sins more and more as I get older. And as I get older, I'm able to look and see things that I did with complete, I hate to say just no compassion or feeling, but I mean, certainly with very little awareness that there was a problem. Things like not listening, things like expecting the family to adjust to my spending of money, expecting the family to forgive me very quickly, thinking that there was some level of spiritual leadership that existed that was just kind of completely oblivious to the kind of life I was living, the kind of person I was presenting to my family. So I would join with anybody who says, I think we've got a feminized evangelicalism that is blaming and mistreating men, overlooking men, and trying to turn the church into a chicken coop. I feel that, and I believe that that's an accurate perception. But I don't believe that this is because that men have tried to do the right thing and it's been entirely rejected. I believe that part of the problem of the feminization of evangelicalism is because men are just, they're absent. They're absent leadership roles. They're absent their responsibility to repent. They're absent their responsibility to be servants. They're absent their responsibility to be emotionally and personally engaged and involved. And the response at this point with evangelicalism is a lot of people standing up saying, we need to be spiritual leaders. And Jesus wasn't a woman in a dress, and women need to, you know, get behind the spiritual leaders in their homes, and guys need to assert their manliness and their masculinity. And it's sort of a, as somebody said, you know, Maximus spiritual leader. You know, churches want the Maximus guy as a spiritual leader. there are some things we need to recover about genuine maleness, but we don't need to caricature it along the way, which is, I'm afraid, what's happening. There are a lot of guys that don't want to buy a Harley, that don't want to go jumping out of planes, that don't want to, you know, talk like, you know, they, by taking on a role of leadership, are repairing years and years and years of what's been wrong. You repair years and years and years of what's been wrong with the gospel and with repentance and with humility and with a servant's heart. And in that post, I'm simply urging men that if you want to be a spiritual leader in your family, then make some things right that have been wrong for a long time. Don't minimize them and don't overlook them. And I list some things. I list some sins. And I think that list bothers some people. But trust me, it's taken right out of my own heart, my own life. And some of the words there are ugly words that I hate to use. And I hate to think that I've ever been cruel or petty or, you know, manipulative and that selfish and arrogant and immature and lazy. But I've been all those things in regard to my family. And I have not adequately attended to those things. And that's one thing I want to do different in the second half of life. You can check out that post at www.internetmonk.com. The name of that post is Repenting of the Wrong Kind of Male Leadership. Repenting of the Wrong Kind of Male Leadership. Well, my name is Michael Spencer. This has been Internet Monk Radio. It's been podcast number 60. And I've been very glad to have you along for the ride. Until next time, I'll see you.